Okay, so today is February 21st, and now I don't see Marty on here, but I'm going to talk about the questions that she asked me last week, so, you know, this is the chance. As a matter of fact, let me put this up on the board. Let me put this up on the board first, and then I'll say what I was going to say, so... what I'm going to put up on the board. Of course, we're in the middle of talking about, we finished 2 weeks ago what I think is the major theme in the Quran, and that is the 25 prophets, the whole deal with prophethood. We've talked about that at length, whether there can be only 25 or there are more than 25, and of course that depends on which sect of Islam you're talking about. And of course, what I tried to do was read you a pretty much an exhaustive compilation of all of the passages in the Quran that deal with any one of the prophets. And, of course, we saw that some are very brief. Some are just, you know, it's just a few, like Elisha, for example. I mean, that's just... pops up in a list of various prophets, and there's nothing special about Elisha. And of course, others had a lot of detail. You know, Noah, there's a lot about Noah. There's a lot about Moses. There's a fair amount about Jesus, stuff like that. And some are middling, you know, amounts of material. But anyway, we finished that 2 weeks ago. And then last week, I began on the next topic that we're talking about, which has to do with, you know, salvation. according to the Quran, you know, I mean, that's the whole message, right? I mean, it's a you know, all or nothing kind of thing. Either you are one of the saved, in which case you'll enjoy delights beyond your wildest imagination, or else you're one of the damned, in which case you will suffer punishments beyond your wildest imagination. At any rate, we've seen that in spades. But then the question is, of course, this very, very important question: if things are that stark, what do I have to do? Tell me what I have to do so I wind up with the gardens as opposed to the hellfire, right? So that's the question that we began dealing with last week. And what I have to say about it is, I've profited quite a bit from an essay I found online asking that very same question, and I am actually using the four alternatives that were presented in that essay as the basis for what I'm going to be talking about. And, you know, the four alternatives, and we just started last week, the four alternatives are, well, okay, what is necessary is belief, and that's pretty obvious. Because it comes up all the time, right? I mean, that's the whole deal with Muhammad and his criticism of his contemporaries, how they are still polytheistic, you know, and you guys just have the wrong belief. So clearly that's a big one, but is that the only one? There are three other possibilities according to this essay, and I'm going to use those. One is repentance, you know. Well, you got to repent too. Well, that's more of a moral sort of thing, not just an intellectual, you know, assent of some kind. It's more of a moral requirement. And then, but then how about works? You know, us good Methodists, we're always worried about that. Well, you know what? That's in there too. And then finally, this is different from all the others, is the idea that, well, golly days, maybe the whole business is just predestined. And, you know, so you got the same issues in Islam as you have in Christianity. I mean, you know, like, for example, Luther, sola fide, you know, we're saved by faith alone, and that's a sort of a radical fideist position. But then, you know, Methodists are all into works and that sort of thing. And then the Catholics are into, you know, confession and whatever. That's all the repentance part, I guess. And then as far back as Augustine, you have this whole predestination theme. So, I mean, the same kinds of things are in Christianity as you find in the Islamic tradition, and it all goes right back to the Quran, of course. So we began last week with the first one, belief. And, you know, there are those five, the catechism, so to speak, the Islamic catechism, the equivalent of the Apostles' Creed, maybe, you know, the belief thing. What do you have to believe in? Well, you got to believe in Allah, of course. You have to believe in Allah's angels. You have to believe in the prophets. You have to believe in the last things, the resurrection, and also you have to believe in, oh yeah, the books, yeah, like the Quran. So you got to believe in Allah, Allah's angels, Allah's books, Allah's prophets, and of course, the end of time when everything will finally be sorted out. You got to believe in that too. So that's like the, you know, like I say, that's like the Islamic catechism, sort of the equivalent of the Apostles' Creed. And that's where we were last week. Now I got these questions. And I didn't know the answers to them. The questions revolved around two things. I didn't know the answers to them last week, and I said I would research them. And so today I am going to digress, and we'll see if we have time to get back to the belief business. Because I was at a nice little stopping point, because what I'm about to talk about with respect to belief is what does the Quran, I should say, have to say about other religions? Because clearly they don't have the same beliefs as Islam, although they have partially the same beliefs. So I mean, how does the Quran, you know, handle other religions? So, but anyway, I was on the cusp of that, and then I got these questions. So I promised to research them, and today I'm going to talk about my research on, you know, the questions about the jinn, whether they're good guys or bad guys, or maybe good and maybe bad, or, you know, whatever. And then the hurries, you know, the whole deal about, you know, these men who go up to heaven and there are all these virgins up there. You know, what does the Quran have to say about that? Now, what I want to point out right off the bat, of course, is that like Eastern Orthodoxy and Catholicism, Islam, and unlike radical Protestantism, let me say, because, you know, you have this sola scriptura idea coming out of Luther as well. You know, that's the whole deal with the Reformation. You know, just get rid of all this junk that's got accreted to Christianity over the centuries, ever since the Apostolic Age, which, by the way, was the ideal. You know, we just throw out the rest, and part of that is all the traditions. Well, in the Orthodox Church and in the Catholic Church, tradition is important. You know, arguments from the fathers have a lot of weight in those denominations. And the same is true in Islam. You have the Hadith, and those are the traditions. And there's a whole so-called science, theological science, involved in evaluating these Hadith. You know, there has to be some sort of chain. You know, just like any reasonable, you know, if you want to know about, does this idea ultimately go back to eyewitnesses? You know, and if it does, then there should be some sort of chain you can trace from here to here to here to here to get back to somebody who heard Muhammad say X, right? That's the idea behind the Hadith. So, I mean, Islam per se is not just the Quran. So it's not a Lutheran sort of idea where it's sola scriptura. No, it's that plus the Hadith. So, I mean, I'm certainly not qualified to talk about the Hadith, and there may be elements of Islam that that supplement what I'm going to be saying with respect to the jinn and the hurries. So this is not necessarily a complete commentary on Islam per se, but I do want to tell you, and I'm going to give you what I hope, what I think, is an absolutely exhaustive survey of what the Quran has to say about the jinn and about the huris, so that you know, as far as I know, this is 100% on both of those. So at least we know what the Quran has to say. Whether or not there are additional things added on with the hadith, that's a whole separate question. Okay. So anyway, we're going to start with the jinn. And what I've done, let me get my notes, the right page here. Yeah, so what I've done is I've grouped these things into three categories, because some of the verses, and these are just random verses, I don't even know, there's hardly any that are more than just a single verse, you know, but that some of these verses are just neutral. I mean, that was the crux of Marty's question, was that are the jinn good? Are they bad? Are they, you know, partly good, partly bad, or what are they? Well, some of the references in the Quran are clearly just neutral. They don't say one way or the other, but some of them are kind of interesting. So we'll talk about those. And then there's another group that are really negative, where the jinn come off as you know, pretty bad. But then there's another group that make the jinn sound a lot like, you know, humans. And I think that sort of supports, by the way, what I said in my answer to her question last week. I mean, that was my general impression, but I didn't know for sure, and I wanted to go back and look at the text to make sure. So anyway, let me start off with the neutral ones. And since these are just random verses, I didn't even mark them, and I have all these, you know, but this is for something else. So I'm just going to go by my notes here. And the first group, under the neutral category, and this is, there are some statements about the creation of the jinn. Okay, there are going to be three verses dealing with the creation of the jinn. The first one is 6:101. And here's how it reads. And they hold the jinn. he's talking about some sect here. And they hold the jinn to be partners with Allah, although he created them, and they falsely ascribe to him sons and daughters without any knowledge. Holy is he and exalted far above what they attribute to him. So, you know, Allah, of course, no surprise there. Allah created the jinn. 15:28. This one, the next one, next two give us a little more information. Okay. And this is 15:28. And the jinn we had created before from the fire of hot wind. So it's verses like this that tell us, of course, that the jinn are these fire creatures, which I have said many times. And the last one is similar, 55:16. And the jinn he created from the flame of fire. Okay. So far we know, and this is just neutral as far as, you know, goodness or badness. So far we know that jinn, like everything else, of course, are created, but we also know that jinn are these fire creatures, so God created them from fire. 17:89. The next one is not particularly noteworthy, I think. It has to do with the Quran. This is say, if mankind and the jinn gathered together to produce the like of this Quran, they could not produce the like thereof, even though they should help one another. Of course, this is in the among the verses that try to show that the Quran is divinely inspired. It cannot no human, no jinn could have come up with what's in the Quran, even if they tried a group effort, they couldn't have done that. But that doesn't really say much about the jinn per se. The next group are kind of interesting. I'm going to start with 27:18. These all have to do with Solomon. Okay. So this is going to be 27, 18, and 40. So anyway, 18. And there were gathered together unto Solomon his hosts of jinn, and men and birds, and they were formed into separate divisions. There's going to be four altogether, I think, four verses altogether, somehow linking the jinn with Solomon. And there's no other prophet in the Quran with whom the jinn are linked. So this is part of his army, maybe, you know, this bunch of jinn. And 40 from the same surah. Said a stalwart from among the jinn, I will bring it to thee before that. Let me just read the one before that. He said, I guess this is Solomon. He said, O nobles, which of you will bring me a throne for her? This would be the Queen of Sheba. Before they come to me submitting. And said a stalwart from among the jinn, I will bring it to thee before thou rise from thy camp. And indeed I possess power, therefore, and I am trustworthy. So this is an officer, a jinn officer, I guess, in Solomon's army. Next two are from Surah number 34, and it's 13 and 15. So let's go to 34. And to Solomon we subjected the wind. Its morning course was a month's journey, and its evening course was a month's journey too. And we caused a fount of molten copper to flow for him. And of the jinn, some who worked under him by the command of his Lord. And we had told them that if any of them turned away from our command, we would make him taste the punishment of burning fire. Which is interesting, because the jinn are fire creatures anyway, but apparently they can be hurt by fire, which answers, I'm not sure, I started to say it answers Tom's question. I'm not sure it answers it, but it asserts, at least, that a fire creature could be hurt by fire. And the last one's 15. And when we decreed Solomon's death, nothing pointed out to them that he was dead save a worm of the earth that ate away his staff. And so when he fell down, the jinn plainly realized that if they had known the unseen, they would not have remained in a state of degraded torment. I'm not sure. There's a footnote here. Let's see here. During his rule, it became gradually apparent to those powerful chieftains, the jinn, who had been subdued and subjugated by Solomon, that Solomon was now virtually dead. They successfully rebelled against the state and caused the fragmentation of the great empire. Okay, well, whatever. But at any rate, these four verses then link the jinn to Solomon. They're neither favorable nor unfavorable to the jinn, really. I mean, I think that I looked up that last phrase, degraded torment. I looked up that particular verse in various other translations, and some of them make it just sound like, well, it's not a slight on the jinn. It's just referring to their status as status of servitude under Solomon. So at any rate, there we are. Neither pro nor con as far as the jinn goes per se, but it is interesting that several verses then have this link between the jinn and Solomon. You know, and then the last one, I'll actually be talking about this with respect to the hurries, because this is linked to the hurries, 55, 57, and 75. Let's see here. And I'll read this one again in just a minute. Therein will also be chaste maidens of modest gaze, whom neither man nor jinn will have touched before them. And And again, whom neither man nor jinn will have touched before them. That's 57 and 75 of Surah 55. So that's neither. That's also one of the neutrals. I'm just giving you an exhaustive rundown of all of the Quranic passages referring to the jinn. That's all. Now,
all right, Don.
Yeah.
Don.
Yes.
Can I ask
yes.
A question.
Sure.
So that last phrase, neither man nor jinn would have touched them. That implies that under other circumstances, jinn may have touched them.
Well, could be, but I think the point is they're virgins. I mean, we'll get to the hurries. I mean, this overlaps
right.
both topics.
Right, but in my questions or my comments a little bit different because it's talking about that implies that humans and jinn could have relationships
I get
on
it.
Earth.
I get it. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? You're right. It does imply that. Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, the jinn are made of fire. Does that mean if you touch them, you'll get burned or something? I guess not. You know, it could just be a sort of an idea that, well, maybe humans are made of earth, you know, the dust of the ground. So ultimately, if you take down the human body to its particles, there'll be particles of earth. And then you take down a jinn's body to its particles, there'll be particles of fire. I suspect that's really what's underlying it. Not so much that they're, you know, going around with flame coming out of their heads or whatever, you know. So therefore, in other words, it would be possible, yeah, for humans and jinn to copulate. I mean, which is where you're going with that comment. You know, so, yeah. Good point, though, yeah. Anything else? Before I get to the negatives. Now, we have a bunch of negatives coming up. So sometimes the jinn come off as sort of demons, you know, which I think was kind of what was behind Marty's question. the first group, I've divided those into two groups. The first one is, my little key word is tempters. They come off as tempters frequently. And 1851 is my first one. And remember the time when, I've read this one before. And remember the time when we said to the angels, submit to Adam. Remember this? And they all submitted except Iblis. Remember? He was one of the jinn. And he disobeyed the command of his Lord. Will you then take him and his offspring for friends instead of me while they are your enemies? Evil is the exchange for the wrongdoers. So Iblis is now, it reminds us, was one of the jinn. 3442. Boy, I tell you, I can hardly talk this morning. 3442. They will say, holy art thou art our protector against them. Nay, but they worshipped the jinn. It was in them that most of them believed. So presumably the jinn are leading people astray to worship themselves, presumably. Next one is 41, 26, and 30. 41. 26 and 30. And we had assigned for them companions who made to appear attractive to them what was before them and what was behind them. And the sentence became due against them along with the communities of jinn and mankind that had gone before them. Surely they were the losers. And 40 was it, right? That was the other one, right? No. Where am I? No, sorry, 30. And those who disbelieve will say, our Lord, show us those who led us astray from among both the jinn and men, that we may put them under our feet so that both of them may become of the lowest. So, I mean, humans can tempt as well, but the jinn are also pointed out as tempters. And finally, 114, 2 through 7 is the last one. 114 is the very last surah in the Quran. So it's all about the jinn. Say, I seek refuge in the Lord of mankind, the King of mankind, the God of mankind, from the evil of the sneaking whisperer who whispers into the hearts of men from among the jinn in mankind. So anyway, this group of verses then represents the jinn as tempters, Iblis being the chief one. So that's that gives them negative publicity. Now, what happens as a result of their temptation? Well, guess what? You'll see. Well, you can figure that out, I'm sure. And this is sit back in sort of 6. 113, 129, and 131. And in like manner have we made for every prophet an enemy, evil ones from among men and jinn. They suggest to one another gilded speech in order to deceive. And if thy Lord had enforced his will, they would not have done it. So leave them alone with that which they fabricate. That sort of goes back to the deception idea. 129. And on the day when he will gather them together, he will say, O company of jinn, you sought to make subservient to yourselves a great many from among men. Right? That's the whole idea. They are tempting humans to worship them instead of Allah. And their friends from among men will say, Our Lord, we profited from one another, but now we have reached our term, which thou didst appoint for us. He will say, The fire is your abode wherein you shall abide, save what Allah may will. Surely thy Lord is wise and all-knowing. In 131, O company of jinn and men, did not messengers come to you from among yourselves who related to you my signs and who warned you of the meeting of this your day? They will say, We bear witness against ourselves. And worldly life deceived them, and they will bear witness against themselves that they were disbelievers. Okay. And again, 7, 39, and 180. He will say, Enter ye into the fire among the nations of jinn and men who passed away before you. Every time a people enters, it shall curse its sister people, until when they have all successively arrived therein, the last of them will say of the first of them, Our Lord, these led us astray, so give them a double punishment of the fire. He will say, For each preceding party there shall be a double punishment, but you do not know. Okay? And let's see, 180. Verily, we have created many of the jinn and men whose end shall be hell. They have hearts, but they understand not therewith. And they have eyes, but they see not therewith. They have ears, but they hear not therewith. They are like cattle. Nay, they are even more astray. They are indeed quite heedless. 11:120. Save those on whom thy Lord has had mercy, and for this he has created them, but the word of thy Lord shall be fulfilled. Verily, I will fill hell with the disobedient jinn and men altogether. 32:14. Okay. And if we had enforced our will, we could have given every soul its guidance, but the word from me has come true. I will fill hell with jinn and men together. And finally, 46:19. These are they against whom the sentence of punishment became due, along with the communities of jinn and mankind that had gone before them. Indeed, they were the losers. Well, all these, interestingly, though, do, you know, say jinn and human beings, too. But, of course, the emphasis here is on the punishment that's meted out as a result of the, well, presumably, as a result of the jinns tempting human beings to worship them instead of Allah. Okay? But now we have another final group of verses that seem to leave out the hope that you can have jinn who were saved too. So, you know, and it kind of, that sounds kind of like where things are going anyway, because of the coupling always with jinn and human beings. You know, it's not the case that it's you know, that it's just the jinn who are going to hell, certainly. It's always said the jinn and men in these verses I've been reading. So let's look at these. 4630 is the first one. Oh, same one. And remember, when we turn towards thee a party of the jinn who wish to hear the Quran, and when they were present at its recitation, they said to one another, "Be silent and listen." And when it was finished, they went back to their people, warning them. So, the jinn heard the Quran, and some were impressed, and they went back and, you know, went back to their people and warned them. Okay. And even more elaborately, 72, 2 through 18. In fact, this surah is titled The Jinn. And so the first little part of it, it's in two sections. The first section is on the jinn. 2 through 18. Right? Yes. Say, it has been revealed to me that a company of the jinn listened, and they said, "Truly, we have heard the Quran that is wonderful. It guides to the right way, so we have believed in it, and we will not associate anyone with our Lord. And we believe that the majesty of our Lord is exalted. He has taken neither wife nor son unto himself." Well, that's a slap, I'm sure, at the Christians. And it is true that the foolish amongst us used to utter extravagant lies concerning Allah. And we thought that men and jinn would never speak a lie concerning Allah. And indeed, some men from among the common folk used to seek the protection of some men from among the jinn. And they thus increased in the latter in their pride. And indeed, they thought, even as you think, that Allah would never raise any messenger. And we sought to reach heaven, but we found it filled with strong guards and shooting stars. And we used to sit on some of its seats to listen, but whoso listens now finds a shooting star in ambush for him. And we know not whether evil is intended for those who are in the earth, or whether the Lord intends something good for them. And some of us are righteous, and some of us are otherwise, and we are sects holding different views. And we know that we cannot frustrate the plan of Allah in the earth, nor can we escape him by flight. And when we heard the call to guidance, we believed in it, and he who believes in his Lord has no fear of loss or injustice. And some of us submit to God, and some of us have deviated from the right course. And those who submit to God, it is those who seek the right course. And as for those who deviate from the right course, they are the fuel of hell. And if they keep to the right path, we shall certainly provide them with abundant water to drink, that we may try them thereby. And whoso turns away from the remembrance of his Lord, he will push him into an overwhelmingly severe punishment. Well, now that's a very elaborate one, much more, you know, much fuller account than the single verse I read earlier saying kind of the same thing. But here it sounds like, you know, well, there's some jinn out there who heard the Quran and they were really impressed, and they preached it to their people, and some believed and some didn't believe. And the believers will go that way and the disbelievers will go the other way. So it sounds like they're just like us, right?
Don, yeah. On that point?
Yeah, yeah.
Listening to all of the verses you just read, it sort of sounds like the jinn could be out there wandering around indistinguishable from people. Like we wouldn't necessarily see someone and say, "Oh yeah, you're a jinn."
You know, that's a really interesting question. And well, since you mentioned that, there's a note at the very end of my edition of the Quran. This is just from the editor, I guess. It's not a note. It's at the very end. He's got some Arabic words explained, like Allah, you know, stuff like that. Iblis, you know, got that one. But here's what the editor says about the jinn. This word has been applied to the Quran in the Quran to the following. And now he's got five different categories. This is the editor's take on it. Number one, evil spirits which inspire evil thoughts in the minds of men. They are the agents of Satan. I'm not sure I've noted that really, but anyway, whatever. Number two, some imaginary beings whom the infidels worshipped, but who existed nowhere in the world. Once again, it sounds to me like the jinn in the world are telling people to worship, you know, getting them to worship them. But anyway, number three, now this kind of relates to what Bonnie just said, what's coming up. In fact, three, four, and five all relate to what Bonnie said. Number three, the inhabitants of northern hilly tracts of Europe of white and red color, whom other peoples looked upon as being separate from other human beings and who lived detached from civilized peoples of Asia, but who were destined to make great material progress in the latter days and to lead a great revolt against religion. Number four, peoples belonging to alien religions and nationalities. And number five, wild and savage peoples who in prehistoric times, before man had developed enough morally to be given a revealed code of laws, lived in caves and hollows of the earth and were subject to no rules of conduct. Now, I'm guessing that some of this is latter-day theological imputation of, you know, facts we know archaeologically and so forth, and subsuming those under the, you know, general category of the jinn. But it does relate to Bonnie's point that yes, some of the jinn, or maybe all of the jinn, I should say, are just like humans in a lot of ways, except maybe their underlying material constitution. You know, they were not made of earth like us. They were made of fire. But they have
can I ask a
two arms,
question?
Two legs, and the whole deal. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, unless you have a lot more to say about them, they're pretty versatile characters. I can see why they're so popular in literature and culture and stuff, because, you know, they're between angels and demons. They can take human form. They have magical powers. Mm-hmm. They can do good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder they're so popular, because you can use them for anything.
Could be. Yeah.
I mean, right? Like Arabian Nights and Aladdin, yeah, and all that stuff. I mean, not just, you know, Robin Williams in The Lamp or Barbara Eden, but they seem exceptionally versatile.
Uh-huh.
As a topic to write about.
Right. Well, yes, it's a very imaginative idea, not unlike some of the Greek myths, maybe, or something like that. And, you know, I can see it would be fodder for all sorts of, you know, imaginative literature. Sure.
Don?
Yeah.
There was even an instance of Iblis in American popular culture.
Oh?
Back in 1979, there was a TV series called Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah. I never saw it, but I've heard a lot about it.
Right. But there was a two-part episode called War of the Worlds or something like this.
Uh-huh.
The Battlestar is beset by enemies, and out of nowhere comes Count Ibli, spelled Iblis.
Uh-huh.
And he has these powers, and he's able to deliver the enemy to them, you know.
Oh, he's a good guy?
He says...
If he's on your side.
Apollo and Starbuck, who are two young commanders on the human side, don't try to stop me. And he gives a demonstration of his power. At the end of the first episode, the enemy is delivered. But in the second episode, Apollo and Starbuck kind of figure out who he is, or figure out what kind of a thing he is.
Uh-huh.
And they corner him. And he disappears into a bundle of flames. He isn't killed, but he disappears in flames. So,
well,
only ran one season, and then there was a two-hour movie, so maybe it wasn't that popular.
But. Yeah, but that just underscores what Tom just said. You know,
yeah.
All sorts of possibilities there.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
There are four other verses just having to do generally with the judgment of the jinn, and as you might suspect, it's kind of neutral. I mean, it just depends on which side you wind up on, right? This is 37, verse 159, and they assert a blood relationship between him and the jinn, while the jinn themselves know that they will be brought before God for judgment. Okay, yeah, they'll be brought before God for judgment, and that means either you're okay or you're not okay. It's not saying that they'll be damned. It's saying that brought before God for judgment. So they'll be put in the balance, in other words. 51:57 is the next one. And I have not created the jinn and the men, but that they may worship me. Yeah, so their job is to worship Allah. That was my intent, God says. Okay, not that they're just going to be demons or something. The last two, 55, 34, and 40. Oh, company of jinn and men, if you have power to go beyond the confines of the heavens and the earth, then do go. But you cannot go save with authority. And finally, 40, on that day, neither man nor jinn will be asked about his sin. I don't know what that means. Anyway, so, bottom line, I guess, is in many ways they're much like us. They have the possibility of believing and so forth, or of disbelieving, of being saved, or of being damned, just like human beings. Although they seem to have be closely associated with tempters, but also with Solomon. So that's, as far as I know, you know everything about the jinn that the Quran has to say. This is an exhaustive survey of what the Quran has to say about the jinn. That doesn't relate to the hadith, but at least the Quran itself. Okay?
But you can see why they're not that faithful Muslims are not required to believe them, since it's so vague.
Yeah. It's the angels that you're required to believe in, but the jinn are not.
But they're deliberately left out of the required belief structure.
Yeah, good point. Anything else before we move on to the Huris? Okay. I have a couple of things in here. As far as I know, now I didn't really try that hard, but as far as I know, this is not about Huris, but about wives. There are a couple of verses about wives, because that's sort of a connected topic, right? And let me at least read those. As far as I know, this is all that the Quran says about wives, but I could be wrong about that. I didn't really delve into it quite as deeply as the Huris. But anyway, this is Surah 13, verses 23 through 25. And those who persevere in seeking the favor of their Lord and observe prayer and spend out of that with which we have provided them secretly and openly and repel evil with good, it is these who shall have the best reward in the final abode, gardens of eternity. They shall enter them, and also those who are righteous from among their fathers and their wives and their children. And angels shall enter into them from every gate, saying, peace be unto you, because you were steadfast. Behold, how excellent is the reward of the final abode. So you go to heaven they go to heaven with their wives, it says. And the next one is Surah 43, verses 69 through 71. 43. Here we go. O my servants, there is no fear for you this day, nor shall you grieve. you who believed in our signs and submitted, enter ye the garden, you and your wives, honored and happy. So that almost sounds like, you know, you go in and your wife is there too. This is obviously from the male point of view, but you can neutralize it and say, okay, for your spouse, you'll be there with your spouse. But as far as I know, those are the only two passages that are like that. But there are far more passages having to do with the hurries. So let's read those. And I'm going to be rather generous with what with the surrounding context, because I think that's important. But the first couple are just a single verse. The very first one is Surah 2, verse 26. And give glad tidings to those who believe and do good works, that for them are gardens beneath which flow streams. Whenever they are given a portion of fruit therefrom, they will say, this is what was given us before, and gifts mutually resembling shall be brought to them. And they will have therein mates perfectly pure, and therein they will abide. 458. This one, I think. I've marked all these. Yeah. And those who believe and do good works, we shall make them enter gardens through which streams flow to abide therein forever. Therein shall they have pure spouses, and we shall admit them to a place of pleasant and plenteous shade. Okay. Next one. 36, 52 through 59. Be this one. Okay, yeah. And the trumpet shall be blown, and lo, from the graves they will hasten unto their Lord. They will say, oh, woe to us who has raised us up from our place of sleep. This is what the gracious God has promised. And the messenger spoke the truth. You know, here they are. They've reached the gardens, and the gracious God is... Okay. And it will be but one blast, and lo, they will be all brought before us. And on that day, no soul will be wronged in aught, nor will you be rewarded but for what you used to do. Verily, the inmates of heaven will on that day be happy in their occupation. They and their wives will be in pleasant shades, reclining on raised couches. They will have fruits therein, and they will have whatever they call for. Peace be on you, a word of greeting from the merciful Lord. Well, actually, that does refer to wives, doesn't it? But it's ambiguous to me whether wives means wives or these, you know, these maidens who are up there in heaven. 37, 40 through 50. And you will be... and by the way, I'm leaving out... all these are in two parts. There's the long description of these wonderful gardens on the one hand, and then there's the corresponding description of the torments of hell. But I'm leaving that part out because that's not relevant to the hurries. And you will be rewarded only for what you have wrought, save the chosen servants of Allah. These will have a known provision, fruits, and they shall be honored in the gardens of bliss, seated on thrones facing one another. They will be served round with a cup from a flowing fountain, sparkling white, delicious to the drinkers, wherein there will be no intoxication, nor will they be exhausted thereby. And with them will be chaste women with restrained looks and large, beautiful eyes, as though they were sheltered eggs. There's your hurries. That's, 37? 44, 52 through 58. Verily, the righteous will be in a place of security and gardens and springs, attired in fine silk and heavy brocade, facing one another. Thus it will be, and we shall consort them with fair maidens, having wide, beautiful eyes. They will call therein for every kind of fruit in peace and security. They will not taste death therein other than the first death, and he will save them from the punishment of the blazing fire, as an act of grace from thy Lord. This is the supreme triumph. 52, Okay. Verily, the righteous are in the gardens of and in bliss, enjoying what their Lord has bestowed on them, and their Lord has saved them from the torment of the fire. Eat and drink in happiness because of what you used to do, reclining on couches arranged in rows, and we shall consort them with fair maidens, having wide, beautiful eyes. Here we go again. And those who believe and those whose children follow them in faith, with them we shall join their children, and we shall not diminish anything from the reward of their works. Every man stands pledged for what he has earned, and we shall bestow upon them an abundance of fruit and meat, such as they will wish for. There they will pass from one to another a cup wherein is neither levity nor sin, and there will wait upon them youths of their own, as though they were pearls well preserved. Okay, 55:47-77. So this is very sybaritic, you know, lifestyle here. 47-77 is almost the end of it. But for him who fears to stand before his Lord, there are two gardens. Which, then, of the favors of your Lord will you twain deny, having many varieties of trees? Which, then, of the favors of your Lord will you twain deny? In both of them there are two fountains flowing free. Which, then, of the favors of the Lord will you then deny? Twain deny, sorry. Therein will be every kind of fruit and pears. I'll skip the every other verses. Which then of the favors of your Lord will you twain deny? I'll skip those now. They will recline on couches above carpets, the linings of which will be of thick brocade, and the ripe fruit of the two gardens will be within easy reach. There will also be chaste maidens of modest gaze, whom neither man nor jinn will have touched before them. That's that same verse I remember was telling you. As if they were rubies and small pearls. The reward of goodness is nothing but goodness. And besides these two, there are other gardens, dark green with foliage. Therein also will be two springs gushing forth with water. And both of them there will be all kinds of fruit and dates and pomegranates. Therein will be maidens, good and beautiful, fair maidens with lovely black eyes, well guarded in pavilions, whom neither man nor jinn will have touched before them, reclining on green cushions and beautiful carpets. That's 55. And then 56:13-41. They will be in gardens of bliss, a large party from among the early Muslims, and a few of the later ones, seated on couches inwrought with gold and jewels, reclining thereon facing each other. There will wait on them youths who will not age, carrying goblets and ewers and cups filled with out of a flowing spring. No headache will they get therefrom, nor will they be intoxicated. I guess, you know, this is wine, which, you know, Muslims can't drink. But I guess in heaven, they get to consume all sorts of wine, but they don't get drunk. And carrying such fruits as they choose, and flesh of birds as they desire, and there will be fair maidens with wide, lovely eyes, like pearls well preserved, as a reward for what they did. They will not hear therein any vain or sinful talk, except only the word of absolution, salutation, I mean, peace, peace. And as for those on the right hand, how lucky are those on the right hand? They will be amidst thornless lote trees, and clustered bananas, and extended shade, and flowing water, and abundant fruit, neither failing nor forbidden, and they will have noble spouses. Verily, we have created them a good creation, and made them virgins, loving of equal age with those on the right hand. A large party from among the early Muslims, and a large party from the later ones. Okay, and finally, 78:32-37. Verily, for the righteous is a triumph. Walled gardens and grapevines, and young maidens of equal age with overflowing cups. Therein they will hear no idle talk nor lying, a recompense from thy Lord, a gift in proportion to their works. Yeah, that's it. Right? Yeah. So there you go. That's all about the hurries. Now, of course, as I said, there are all sorts of, you can well imagine how this gets developed. The imagination is the only limit, how this little seed of information gets developed in certain parts of the Islamic tradition expanded greatly beyond the wide eyes like eggs or whatever it is. But yeah, that's part of the sybaritic delights of the afterlife. And in the Middle Ages, at least, I mean, for example, Al-Ghazali, who was part of the Asharite tradition, who want to interpret all this literally, that's literally true, just like the fire of hell. There are gardens there. It's not a metaphor for psychological peace or something like that. There are gardens. There are couches. They are all bejeweled. There are these youths who serve them constantly, you know, alcohol and wine and all sorts of wonderful fruits and birds and so forth. And they're constantly dining. I guess they're alternating between dining and sex or something like that with these houris who are there with these wide, beautiful eyes and virgins and the whole deal. So that's what's in the Quran. But some of the more lewd developments of all this, which you can easily find online, are not in the Quran. They're somebody's imagination going way beyond that. Comments in the last minute or so we have? Questions? Okay. All right, well, you can ruminate on that for the next week then. And so we'll pick up again next week on where I was actually going before I agreed to research these two topics and talk about other religions and what's the deal with them, according to the Quran. So, see you next week.
Thanks, Don.
Bye-bye.
Good lecture.
Bye. Thanks, Don.
Bye.
Thanks for
talking
about Plato's Progress.
Yeah.